Hallmark Entertainment Productions and TNT present Patrick Stewart in A Christmas Carol. A hearse pulled by two black-plumed horses rattles across a bleak landscape. Snow drifts down. With Richard E. Grant, Joel Grey, Ian McNeice, Saskia Reeves, Desmond Barrett, Bernard Lloyd, Dominic West, Trevor Peacock, Liz Smith, Elizabeth Spriggs, Kenny Doughty, Laura Fraser, and Celia Imrie. Behind the hearse, next to the undertaker, walks a sour-faced gentleman. Under his blacktop hat, he's completely bald. He has a sharp chin, a beaky nose, and his narrow lips are clamped in a thin line. The coffin is carried into the churchyard and set down by a freshly dug grave. A silver plate on the coffin reads, Jacob Marley, R.I.P. 1783 to 1836. The vicar steps forwards.
Man that is born of woman hath but a short time to live, and is full of misery. He cometh up and is cut down like a flower.
The sour-faced man shows no emotion. Inside the church, he signs the death register with a scratchy quill. He puts the quill down. The undertaker and the vicar watch him.
I can hardly believe that Mr. Marley's gone.
He's at peace, Mr. Crump.
He's nowhere, sir. Truth is, he's dead. Dead as a doornail. Though I don't know what's particularly dead about a doornail.
Come to think of it, I wouldn't think that a doornail was the deadest piece of ironmongery in the trade. Why not say dead as a doorknob? Or a door knocker?
Nail, knob, or knocker. Jacob's gone. There's an end to it.
A mighty poor turnout for such an important businessman.
Perhaps it was because of the day he died.
The day he died, sir?
Christmas Eve.
It would account for the lack of grieving relatives.
At least he was spared that in his final hours.
Great loss, sir. We leave you to grieve in silence.
The vicar and the undertaker drain their glasses of sherry and leave the man, Ebenezer Scrooge, staring down at the death register.
Herbert Scrooge and Marley will miss your shrewd brain and keen eye, Jacob. We went through some hard times together. But we pulled through, and we thrived on the idleness of others. Rest content, Jacob. The firm we built together will prosper.
His breath freezes in the cold air.
I promise.
He raises his glass and drinks. He slams the book shut. Under a lowering sky, the rooftops of London powdered with snow. Music by Stephen Warbeck, costume designer Charles Node, director of photography Ian Wilson, executive producers Robert Halmy Sr. and Patrick Stewart, produced by Dyson Lovell, based on the novel by Charles Dickens, written for television by Peter Barnes, directed by David Jones. A hansom cab drives down a narrow London street. Mr. Scrooge walks with measured tread, weaving his way between people and carriages.
Oh, boy, a lovely morning moment!
He walks on down an alleyway. Snow flutters down. He passes a butcher's. Geese are displayed over the open sill.
Merry Christmas, sir!
Shaking his head, Scrooge ignores the greetings. He enters a building. The name Scrooge and Marley is painted on a sign above the bay window. His clerk, Bob Cratchit, helps him off with his overcoat. Outside, the snow's still falling. An iron sign juts out above the door. It's painted with the names of Scrooge and Marley. The sign fades and rusts, shrouded by the fog of the passing years. Bob Cratchit stands in the bow window. The small panes are misted inside with the cold. Cratchit rubs off the ice with his mittened hands. Mr. Scrooge paces his inner office. He sees Cratchit. Cratchit turns.
I was wondering, sir, if after 7 years
You'll be removing Mr. Marley's name from the sign outside.
No. Time will erase it at no cost to us.
Yes, sir.
Scrooge flicks through a large ledger and sits at his desk. He copies details from one book to another, running his finger down the line of entries. Bob Cratchit hunches over his desk in the outer office, writing entries in a smaller ledger. He blows on his fingers to keep warm. He steals a look at his employer, then walks cautiously around the partition, entering Scrooge's inner office. Cratchit squats by the fire and gingerly lifts the lid of the coal scuttle. Scrooge glares.
I was just getting some coal, sir, for the fire. It's going out.
Poke it, sir. Poke it!
Cratchit pokes the fire and the flames go out. Meekly, he hastens back to his desk. Scrooge carries on with his work. Cratchit drops his quill and breathes on his hands, then holds them out to the candle to warm them. Scrooge glances over at him, his cold eyes narrowed. Bob Cratchit quickly picks up his quill pen and resumes his work. A young gentleman peers in the window, grins, and comes inside. He's about 30. He wears a brown top hat and fawn frock coat. He looks at Bob Cratchit and puts a silencing finger to his lips. Cratchit allows himself a cautious grin as the young man creeps up on Scrooge.
A Merry Christmas, Uncle! God save you!
Scrooge shudders.
Humbug.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle. You don't mean it.
I do mean it, sir. Merry Christmas. What reason have you to be merry? What right have you to be merry? You're poor.
Well, what right have you to be miserable, then? You're rich. Merry Christmas.
Damn you, Merry Christmas. What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money? A time for finding yourself a year older and not an hour richer? A time for balancing your books and finding every item dead against you?
If I had my way, every idiot who went around with Merry Christmas on his lips would be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart.
Come, Uncle.
Nephew, you keep Christmas in your way. I'll keep it in mine.
But you don't keep it.
Then let me leave it alone, then.
I still say Merry Christmas.
That's all you do say. Much good it does you. Much good it'll ever do you.
I dare say there are many things I got a lot of good from which haven't made me a penny profit. Christmas amongst them. You see, Uncle, I've always thought of Christmas as a time for good, not a time for profit. A kind, forgiving time. A time when men and women can think of others. I was never put an extra penny in my pocket, but I believe Christmas has done me good and will do me good. So I still say, Merry Christmas, Uncle.
Cratchit applauds. Scrooge rounds on him.
You said something, Mr. Cratchit?
No, sir.
Not a sound out of you, sir, and you'll make this a truly Merry Christmas by losing your job.
Cratchit slinks back to his desk.
Uncle, don't be awful, Mr. Cratchit. It's all my fault.
You're quite the powerful speaker, sir. Wonder you don't go into Parliament.
Don't be angry, Uncle. Dine with us tomorrow.
Dine with you? Damned first.
But why?
Why did you marry?
Because I fell in love.
Because you fell in love. Love. Humbug.
Oh, so you won't come to see me because I'm married?
Yes.
Well, you never came to see me when I wasn't married.
Scrooge grimaces.
Good afternoon, nephew.
I want nothing from you. I ask nothing of you. Why can't we be friends?
Good afternoon.
I'm sorry you're so stubborn. But I came here full of the Christmas spirit, so I say again, Merry Christmas, Uncle.
Good afternoon.
And a Happy New Year.
Good afternoon.
And Merry Christmas to you, Mr. Cratchit.
Merry Christmas, sir.
The nephew goes. Scrooge checks the door, then steps over to his clerk.
You find my nephew amusing, Cratchit.
He's a very pleasant fellow, sir.
Yeah, you're another Christmas lunatic like him.
If you say so, sir.
Oh, it seems you doubt me, Mr. Cratchit. What are you, then?
Your clerk, Mr. Scrooge.
My 15-shilling-a-week clerk with a wife and family. Yet you babble about Merry Christmas. I'll retire to bedlam.
Scrooge goes back to his desk. Cratchit sinks down at his. Outside, the nephew tips his hat to two gentlemen.
Sir, do you know this area?
Tolerably well.
We're new to the district. We're looking for the offices of Scrooge and Marley.
Some 50 yards along, on the right.
Good, good. We're collecting charitable donations for the poor of Clerkenwell.
You're collecting money on behalf of a charity from Mr. Ebenezer Scrooge.
Yes, and Mr. Marley and other businessmen of the neighbourhood.
Yes, we think Christmas Eve is the most appropriate time for giving freely.
They tip their hats and move on. Scrooge's nephew raises his eyebrows and gives a wry smile. The gentlemen enter the office.
This is the office of Scrooge and Marley.
It is, sir.
May I press your curules, sir? Do I have the honour of addressing Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?
Mr. Marley has been dead these 7 years. He died 7 years ago this very night.
Mr. Williams and Mr. Foster, may we offer our sympathy?
Why? You're not relatives, are you?
No, but we feel sure you must be thinking about him at this time.
And I'm sure his generosity is represented by his surviving partner.
He hands Scrooge a leaflet. Scrooge hands it back.
At this festive time of the year, it is surely desirable that we make some slight provision for the poor and destitute. Don't you agree?
Bob Cratchit gulps and slips back to his desk.
I take it that you gentlemen are new to the district.
New and eager, sir. You will agree, I'm sure, that many thousands of people lack the basic necessities, and many hundreds of thousands lack ordinary comforts.
Are there no prisons?
Plenty of prisons, sir.
And the union workhouses, are they still in operation?
Yes, they are. I only wish I could say they were not.
A few of us are endeavouring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth.
How much may we put you down for, Mr. Scrooge?
Scrooge turns his hard face to theirs.
Nothing.
You wish to remain anonymous.
I wish to be left alone. I don't make merry myself at Christmas time, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I support those institutions I have mentioned, and I expect the poor to make use of them. Those who are badly off must go there.
Many cannot go there, and many would rather die.
They'd rather die. They'd better do it and decrease the surplus population. Mr. Cratchit, would you show these gentlemen out?
Scrooge picks up his quill and resumes his work. The men sigh, exchange bemused glances, and follow Bob Cratchit to the door. They pass children carol singing outside the neighbouring office.
I bring to you and all mankind.
A man steps out, nods and gives them money.
I'm going to try Scrooge's.
Oh, no, don't do that!
A little boy runs to Scrooge's door.
Good Jingleensis last looked out on the feast of Stephen.
Scrooge scowls and tries to concentrate on his accounts.
Deep and crisp and even.
He sighs, snatches up a rule, and wielding it, heads for the door.
When a poor man came in...
It's Scrooge! Ah!
Away from here!
The children run off. Scrooge looks up and down the street, then stomps back inside. He checks his pocket watch against the clock on the wall. 7 o'clock. He puts down the rule. Bob Cratchit goes to collect his hat and muffler. Mr. Scrooge puts on his overcoat.
You'll want all day tomorrow, I suppose.
If it's convenient, sir.
It's not convenient. It's not fair. If I was to deduct half a crown for your taking the day off, you'd think yourself ill-used, I'll be bound. But you don't think me ill-used when I pay a day's wages for no work.
It's only once a year, sir.
Fine excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December. Well, I suppose you must have the whole day. You'll be here all the earlier the next morning.
Yes, sir. Mary...
You were about to say something, Cratchit.
Nothing, sir.
Scrooge fixes him with a beady glare, then heads out. Cratchit collects the keys and blows out his candle. Mr. Scrooge walks down the darkened street. There's a light frosting of snow. He reaches a house with shuttered windows and climbs the steps to the front door. He fishes in his pocket for his keys. As he goes to unlock the door, he stares in horror at the knocker. It transforms into the face of an old man. Scrooge gasps. The face lets out an agonized moan. Scrooge frowns.
Jacob Marley.
The face fades, and the knocker returns to normal. Scrooge looks around. The street is empty.
Humbug.
He enters the dark hall, puts his keys on the table, and climbs the bare wooden staircase. He goes into the upstairs living room. He carries a candlestick. Holding the candle close to his face, he shuts and bolts the door. He holds a taper to the coals in the fireplace, then blows the taper out. Hearing a noise, he turns. He peers cautiously behind a chair. Hearing a footfall from the other side of the room, he carries his candle over to a cupboard. Grasping the door handle slowly, he opens the door with a sudden yank. Inside is a chest of drawers and a collection of trunks. Scrooge shines the candle into the corners, nods satisfied, and shuts the door. He slides home the bolts. Crouching by the fire, he ladles himself a bowl of soup. He wears a dressing gown and nightcap. He sits by the hearth. Firelight flickers over his face as he starts to eat. The blue and white Dutch tiles around the fireplace portray scenes from the scriptures. In one, Cain is striking Abel. Scrooge stares as the face of Cain turns and looks at him, taking on the appearance of Jacob Marley. Scrooge blinks and looks again. The tile is back to normal. Another tile shows Christ and the apostles. The image transforms into Marley's face. Scrooge puts down his spoon and places his hand on his stomach.
Indigestion.
A bell on the wall begins to ring. Scrooge looks up aghast. The doors are still locked. Scrooge listens anxiously. He puts down his bowl and looks towards the door. Something is coming up the stairs.
No, I won't believe it.
A translucent hand comes through the door, then the rest of the ghostly figure. A heavy chain is wound about him. Scrooge cringes back against the wall.
What business do you want with me?
Much.
Who are you, sir?
Ask me who I was.
Very well. Who were you then?
In life, I was your partner. Jacob Marley.
A muscle twitches in Scrooge's face.
Can you sit down?
I can.
Well, do it then.
The ghost drags its chains towards a chair. The upholstery is visible through him. The ghost has a shock of white hair that's ruffled by its own breeze. A bandage ties up its jaw. Scrooge stares at the ghost's chain that trails across the floorboards.
You don't believe in me.
I don't.
Why do you doubt your senses?
Scrooge picks up his soup.
Because little things upset him. An upset stomach can put him quite out of order. You could be a crumb of moldy cheese, an underdone turnip.
Moldy cheese? An underdone turnip?
Oh, some British beef. That could be mighty upsetting to the stomach. There's more gravy than grave about you, Jacob.
The ghost stands and rages. It unfastens the bandage and its jaw drops to his breast.
What is it? Speak up, man.
Scrooge stretches out a tentative hand, closing its jaw shut. The ghost sits back down.
Why do spirits walk the earth? And why do they come to me?
It is required of every man that the spirit within him should walk abroad among his fellow men and travel far and wide. And if that spirit goes not forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. It is doomed to wander through the world. Oh, woe is me! And witness what it cannot share, but might have shared on earth, and turn to happiness.
You're fettered. Tell me why.
I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link and yard by yard. It is a ponderous chain. Do you know the weight and length of the strong coil you bear? It was as heavy and as long as this 7 Christmas Eves ago. You have labored on it since.
Scrooge looks around to check.
Jacob. Jacob Marley. Speak comfort to me, Jacob.
I have none to give. I cannot rest. I cannot stay. I cannot linger anywhere. Oh, never to be able to make amends for missed opportunities. Oh, for the torture of remorse.
Jacob, I don't understand why you're suffering. All your life, you were a good businessman.
That's why I'm suffering. The suffering I caused others is being repaid.
Jacob, it was business.
Business? Mankind was my business. The common good was my business. At this time of the rolling year, I saw most. Why I can appear to you tonight in a shape that you can see, I do not know. But I have sat invisible beside you many and many a day, trying to reach you. Listen to me, Ebenezer. My time on earth is nearly gone. I am here to warn you that you have a chance of escaping my terrible fate. A chance I got for you.
You are always a good friend to me, Jacob.
You will be haunted by 3 spirits.
Is this the chance you spoke of?
It is.
In that case, I'd rather not.
Without their visits, you have no hope of escaping your fate. Expect the first tomorrow when the bell tolls 1.
Couldn't I take them all at once and have it over and done with?
Expect the second spirit on the next night at the same time, and the third the night following at 12.
Scrooge sighs heavily. The phantom ties up its jaw, pulling the bandage tight.
Look to see me no more. And for your own sake, remember what has passed between us.
The ghost walks to the window. The shutters fly open and the sash slides up. Scrooge watches with alarm. The ghost points outside. Scrooge ventures to the window and peers out. The night sky is filled with restless spirits bound with chains. They float, stretching out their arms, their mouths open in so many silent screams. Scrooge opens his eyes wide in horror. A man in 18th century clothes drags an iron safe behind him attached to a chain about his ankle. He hovers down towards a pauper and her infant, huddled on the pavement in the snow. Scrooge frowns. The ghost stretches out its hands towards the woman.
These spirits try to interfere for good in human affairs, but they've lost the power forever.
The ghost flies upwards. Marley turns to Scrooge.
That is the curse we bear.
Scrooge looks at his old friend, who sails out over the sill, dragging his chains behind him. Marley joins the thousands of blue-white spirits ascending like a vapor trail into the sky. Scrooge slams the shutters, his face lined and drawn. Scrooge lies in his four-poster bed.
4:15. 1:30. 1:45. The hour itself. Nothing's happened.
A white light shines on him. A hand pulls back the curtains. A slender figure glows with a dazzling light.
Are you the spirit whose coming was foretold?
I am.
Who? What are you?
I am the ghost of Christmas past.
Long past?
No. Your past.
Spirit, put on your cap. Be covered.
What? Would you so soon put out the light I give? Is it not enough that you are one of those whose passions made this cap and forced me to wear it low upon my brow?
No intention of offending you, sir.
The harsh light fades to softer glow. Scrooge lowers his hand that was shielding his eyes.
Thank you. What business brings you here?
Your welfare.
Oh, well, I'm much obliged to you. But a peaceful night of unbroken rest would have been more conducive to that end.
Your reclamation, then.
The spirit holds out its hand to Scrooge and smiles.
Come with me.
Some other time, perhaps. I'm not dressed. I have a weak chest. Monstrous head cold.
Rise and walk with me.
Reluctantly, Scrooge moves to take the spirit's hand. The spirit steps backwards, drawing Scrooge towards him. He leads Scrooge to the open window.
No, I'm mortal. I'm liable to fall.
All I have to do is touch you. There.
He puts his hand on Scrooge's chest. The wall ahead dissolves, giving way to a winter woodland. The spirit smiles. Scrooge stares in amazement, then lowers his gaze. Dead leaves blow in across the floorboards. The boards vanish, replaced by frosty ground. The spirit steps forwards and turns. Scrooge follows him.
Good heavens! I know this place. I was a boy here.
You remember the way?
Remember it? I could walk it blindfold.
A pony trap comes over a bridge towards them, followed by a cart full of boys.
I know these boys. We went to the same school. They're Jenkins! And Tony Vick!
On trots a pony.
Benjamin Fish! And Toby Bell.
Scrooge runs towards him.
Toby!
The boys don't react. Scrooge turns to the spirit.
They're only shadows of things that have been. They can't see us or hear us. They're going home for the Christmas holidays.
Scrooge looks sadly in the direction of the boys and swallows. The spirit, dressed all in white, moves on. Scrooge follows. They stand by a facade of a ruined building.
It's my old school.
The spirit leads him to an upstairs room furnished with rows of wooden desks. Hunched at the front desk near the blackboard is a lonely boy of about 10 years old. Scrooge stares at the boy, who gazes forlornly at the fire. Scrooge ventures closer. The boy rests his head glumly on his hands, not noticing the old man in dressing gown and nightcap. Scrooge sinks down, observing the lad wistfully. The spirit approaches with a look of tender concern.
Why didn't you go home for Christmas?
I wasn't wanted. My father turned against me when my mother died. Sent me away. Didn't want to see me ever.
That's hard.
Scrooge glares.
Life is hard.
Let's see another Christmas.
The boy, a few years older, stands staring out of the schoolroom window, then mooches away. Scrooge and the spirit observe him. The lad faces the wall, folds his arms, and buries his head. Scrooge frowns, remembering.
Fran.
A girl runs in through the door.
Fran!
The lad flings his arms around her.
What are you doing here, Fran?
I've come to bring you home, brother. Home. Home, home.
For how long?
Forever and ever. Father's changed. He's so much kinder than he used to be. Home's like heaven now. He spoke so gently to me one day night when I was going to bed that I wasn't afraid to ask him once more if he might come home. And he said, yes, you should, and sent me in a coach to bring you.
Oh, Fran!
Come on.
Hand in hand, they race out of the room. Scrooge walks to the window. He watches them run to a waiting carriage. He smiles as the carriage moves off under an archway at the end of the drive. In the carriage, Fran rests her head on her brother's shoulder. The boy grins happily. Scrooge stands outside, a wistful smile etched on his sharp features.
Such a delicate creature. But she had a large heart.
So she had. You're right. I'll not deny it, Spirit. God forbid.
She died young.
Too young.
Your sister married and had children.
One child.
True. Your nephew.
Fred. Yes.
The spirit looks at him. Scrooge averts his gaze and stares at the ground. Then his head jerks up in amazement. He and the spirit are walking along a dark London street. They stand outside a shop front.
Do you know this place?
Know it. I was apprenticed here.
Over the window, a sign reads, Albert Fezziwig & Co. Scrooge walks to a side door, pauses, then pushes it open. Inside, a portly man sits at his desk.
Fezziwig. It's old Fezziwig. Alive again.
Yo-ho Ebenezer Dick at 7 o'clock.
Dick Wilkins. Why, bless me, there he is. He was very much attached to me, was Dick.
No more work, boys. It's Christmas Eve, Dick. It's Christmas, Ebenezer. No more business. Doors closed. Shut us up before you can say Jack Robinson. Yo-ho, yo-ho, quickly, quicker, clear away. Mind the ledger. Now then, watch out, chop.
Scrooge looks at the bookkeeping of his younger self and nods approval. Young Ebenezer fixes shutters over the windows. Fezziwig hurries him along.
Shut us up. Doors next. We're ready, ladies.
Hold your horses, husband.
Horses? Horses? I see no horses, my dear.
Mrs. Fezziwig scampers over to her husband and they kiss.
Splendid woman, Mrs. Fezziwig.
Lely Fezziwig.
A boy runs down from the gallery above.
Marigold, Daisy and Lily Fezziwig.
The boy runs to young Scrooge.
Ebenezer, Ebenezer, do the trick.
You want the trick, Master Eli? Abracadabra, one, two.
He magics a coin from Eli's ear.
Three!
Yay!
Mrs. Fezziwig, I thought you were on a diet.
I am, but I need this to give me the strength to go on with it.
Tuck in, one and all. Eat heartily before Mrs. Fezziwig has it all. And remember, she's on a diet.
The assembled guests tuck in. The three teenage daughters dance with three young men. Eli looks down on them from the gallery. There's a small band behind him. Scrooge sits and watches the dancers sober-faced, but his slippered feet tap in time to the music. Young Ebenezer and his friend Dick face each other. Kicking up their legs in a mock Scottish dance, they grow wilder and wilder. Scrooge stands and watches intently as Dick and young Ebenezer whirl each other round, grinning from ear to ear.
Hey!
The young men bow. Scrooge is entranced.
Your turn, Mr. Fezziwig.
Not tonight, Mrs. F.
Oh, persuade him, Ebenezer.
No, I wouldn't be Christmas without you performing, Mr. Fezziwig.
Oh, very well. I could always coax him into it.
The spirit observes Scrooge sadly. Mr. Fezziwig holds up his arms and pirouettes with dainty steps, then bows low. His chins wobble.
Everyone surely knows I want to marry close. I am not a one to close. I want to marry Rose. But there's her. Uncle and a brother, a sister and a mother, yes, an uncle and a brother and a sister and a mother, but Rose, I'm not going to marry all of those artisan dozens and fat-headed cousins. Rose, I'm not going to marry all of those artisan dozens and fat-headed cousins. Rose,
from Portsmouth, Polka! Fezziwig launches himself onto the dance floor. Others follow. He partners his wife in a country dance. Hand in hand, they gallop between two rows of dancers. His wife skips back. Fezziwig waddles after her. He totters as his wife spins him round. Young Ebenezer is waiting by the door. A girl with raven black hair arrives. She smiles as she sees him. Ebenezer unfastens the ties of her cloak. Old Scrooge stands to watch. Young Ebenezer slips the cloak from the girl's slender shoulders. She wears a bright yellow dress. She lifts her face to his and they kiss. Scrooge, on the other side of the room, peers over the heads of the dancers, gazing intently at the young couple. The musicians play on. One has a fiddle, another a clarinet, and the third a wind instrument curved like a serpent. Young Ebenezer waltzes with the dark-haired girl, who smiles up at him all the while. Scrooge watches them, his thin lips relaxing into something like a smile. He sits, rests his elbow on the ledger, and props his chin in his hand.
Fezziwig once said to me, "Ebenezer, when happiness shows up, always give it a comfortable seat."
True.
The spirit looks at
giving
him.
Giving people pleasure is such a small matter. He only spent a few pounds, 3 or 4 at best. Is it so much that he deserves praise for it?
You don't understand, spirit. He had the power to make us happy or unhappy, to make our work heavy or light.
Scrooge checks himself.
What's the matter?
Nothing.
Looking back, perhaps things seemed better than they really were.
All this was a lie, then?
The world changes. You can't trust anything. But no. It was just like this, right down to the last mince pie and dance.
Scrooge sighs. The spirit gazes down from the balcony. Young Ebenezer and the girl are waltzing on their own. The guests have disappeared. Snow falls. The couple waltz in their own private snowstorm. The building fades, leaving Scrooge and the spirit in a winter garden.
Years change people. I don't wish to look, sir.
You must.
The couple, a little older, walk towards them.
There's nothing the world is so hard on as poverty, Belle. And there's nothing it professes to condemn with such severity as the pursuit of wealth.
You fear the world too much.
He stops and looks at her.
All your nobler hopes have merged into the one hope of being rich.
She sits on a bench.
One master passion engulfs you.
He joins her.
Money.
What of it? Even if I've grown wiser, I've not changed towards you, have I?
Our promise to marry is an old one. It was made when we were poor and content to be so until we improved our fortunes. You are changed. When we promised each other, you were another man.
I was a boy.
How often and how keenly I have thought of this, I will not say. But I have thought of it, and can release you from your promise.
Old Scrooge shakes his head.
No. No. Have I ever asked you to release me?
In words? No. Never.
How then?
In your changed nature. In everything that made me love you. If this had never been between us, tell me, would you seek me out and try to win me now?
Old Scrooge looks at his younger self, silently urging him to speak. The lad looks down. The girl nods.
No.
You think not?
I know you wouldn't, my love.
Speak to her. Why doesn't he speak to her?
If you were free today, tomorrow, yesterday, would you choose a poor girl like me to marry? You who weigh everything by gain? No, there'd be no profit in it. And if you forgot your principle of profit for a moment and did marry me, you'd regret it, my love. I know. And so I release you with a full heart for the love of the man you once were.
Scrooge shakes his head bitterly. The girl stands to go. Snow falls.
May he be happy in the life you've chosen.
She lifts the hood of her cloak. Young Ebenezer looks up, his brow furrowed, but says nothing. The girl turns and walks away.
Go after her.
Young Ebenezer makes to stand, then sits back.
Don't be afraid.
go after!
The girl heads along the path, then turns back. Young Ebenezer stares at the ground. He lifts his gaze to look directly at Scrooge. Scrooge stands despondent and watches the girl as she looks round once more, then heads off into the whirling snow. Scrooge clamps his lips together, his hands dangle helpless at his sides, as the girl is swallowed up into the white. He turns to the spirit.
No more. Show me no more. Take me home. I do delight in torturing me.
Scrooge climbs the stairs. The spirit stands in the hall. The white glow around him brightens to a dazzling light.
Haunt me no longer!
The spirit shakes his head. Scrooge runs downstairs, grabs a giant candle snuffer and brings it down over the spirit's head. The light shrinks as Scrooge forces the snuffer down towards the floor, and he cowers back against the wall. Radiating around the base of the snuffer is an incandescent glow. Scrooge jolts awake. He's in his four-poster bed. He sits up and fearfully pulls back the drapes. There's a light shining under the door which stands ajar. Scrooge approaches cautiously and puts his nose to the crack, then steps through to the next room, which is aglow with many candles. A mountain of a man sits on the table.
Come in. Come in and know me better, man. Have you never seen anything like this before?
Not in this house.
I am the ghost of Christmas present. Haven't you met with others of my family? My older brothers who preceded me?
I don't think I have, Spirit. Have you had many brothers?
More than 1,800.
Tremendous family to provide for.
The bearded spirit stands. His head is wreathed with holly.
Take me where you wish. I'd like to get this over and done with.
Touch my robe.
Scrooge steps forward and touches the spirit's green brocade cloak edged with fur. Apples tumble into a basket. He and the spirit are in a market. The spirit looks from the greengrocer to Scrooge and smiles. From his cornucopia, he sprinkles water on the loaves of the baker. Then over the baskets of the customers. The people carry on talking, unaware.
You sprinkle water on the food. Is there a blessing in it?
There is. My own.
And would that apply to any meal on this day?
Well, to any kindly given. To a poor one, most of all.
Why to a poor one, most of all?
Because it needs it most.
The spirit strides on. Scrooge, in his nightcap and gown, follows. They walk down a cobbled alleyway.
Where are we going now, Spirit?
Mr. Cratchit's house. Every Christmas.
My clerk, Bob Cratchit.
The same Bob you pay 15 bob a week. Every Saturday he pockets just 15 copies of his Christian name. And yet here I am, the ghost of Christmas present, going to bless him.
The spirit dips his hand in his horn of plenty and sprinkles water over a door.
Yesterday the bear took the
in the kitchen, a woman is mashing potatoes.
Collar off your sticks, but we were up to all their tricks.
Children run in. A small girl leans on the table and smiles up at her mother.
Oh, good gracious, didn't we make a show?
The spirit comes down the stairs. Scrooge follows and watches the domestic scene.
We've all been having a go. Oh, we've all been having a go. Yeah, we've all been having a go.
Let the punch get nice and hot, Belinda. Your father should be home in a minute with Tim.
Martha's here!
Hooray!
Did you see the goose, Martha?
It's such a goose, Martha.
You'll not believe it!
The mother hugs her eldest daughter.
Bless my heart alive, my dear, you're late. We had a great deal of work to finish off, so I slept all night in the workshop. Then we had to clear away this morning.
She sounds a very hard-working young girl.
She has to be.
Never mind, never mind, so long as you're here. You sit yourself down by the fire and have yourself a good warm.
No, no! Here's Father coming!
Father's coming! Hide, Martha! Go on, hide!
Martha hides in the larder. The others act innocent. Bob Cratchit comes in with a small boy perched on his shoulder. Bob gallops like a horse. The boy balances on his crutch as Bob sets him down.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Father.
And so say all of us.
Come on, Tim, you need a walk.
An older brother helps the little boy away.
No, Cratchit had a crippled son.
Why didn't you ask?
Scrooge makes to answer, but the spirit moves away.
Where's Martha?
Mrs. Cratchit tries to hide her smile.
It's not coming.
Not coming? Not coming Christmas Day.
Behind him, Martha emerges and covers his eyes with her hands.
Martha! It's Martha!
He hugs her and swings around. He kisses his wife.
Of course it is.
Come on, girls. Let's get the table laid.
Bob sits in a chair in the corner. Squeezing his eyes shut, he wriggles his shoulders. The girls lay the scrubbed pine table.
How did Tim behave?
As good as gold. And better. Somehow he gets thoughtful sitting by himself so much. And he thinks the strangest things you ever heard. He told me, coming home, he hoped the people saw him in church because he was a cripple. And it might be pleasant for him to remember on Christmas Day who made lame beggars walk and blind men see.
Not many remember that. You can count on it.
I think he's getting better by the day.
He's grown stronger, Mother.
Tim hobbles in using his crutch.
Everyone go to the table.
The goose. Is it ready? It
should be. It's been cooking for the past 5 hours.
There you go, Tim. Gravy.
Scrooge and the spirit settle down to watch. Bob encourages the children to bang their cutlery on the table. The goose is set in front of Bob.
It's beautiful.
No, it's not there to be looked at.
You did the honours, Mother.
He hands her the carving knife and moves out of the way. He sits at the other end of the table while Mrs. Cratchit carves.
It's a beauty. Where'd you get it, Mother?
The market. I left it late, so I got it cheap.
Very clever, my dear.
Scrooge steps closer and wrinkles his nose.
That smelled good, I must say.
The children help themselves to potatoes, then tuck in.
Melts in your mouth.
Have a gravy.
It's just sage and onion.
It's a feast, Mother. Only you could have done it.
She smiles happily at Bob, who comes round to give her a kiss.
What do you think, Tim?
What
should
I say, Tim?
Speak up, Tim.
Good lad, chance.
He tries to swallow his mouthful.
It's the best goose we've ever had.
Yeah.
Bob ruffles Tim's hair and returns to his seat.
Come, Spirit. Will Tiny Tim live?
I see an empty chair by the fireplace and a crutch without an owner, carefully preserved. Unless the future changes, the child will die.
Scrooge folds his arms and clamps his lips together, eyes downcast. The plates are cleared.
Wonderful meal, Mother. Done us proud.
The best is yet to come, Robert.
Pudding!
She lifts it from the copper in the wash house.
It might not be done yet.
Mother might break it, turning it out.
Suppose somebody got over the garden wall and stole it when we were eating the goose.
Don't say that.
They couldn't.
Mrs. Cratchit carries the pudding in.
Oh,
look at the flames.
It's
She sets it on a trivet in the centre of the table.
And there's the holly.
Martha sticks a sprig in the top. Mrs. Cratchit cuts a slice and puts it on a plate.
Pass that to your father.
They hand it down the table. Bob takes it. He looks up at the children. 8 pairs of eyes are trained on him as he tries a spoonful. He looks serious. Shuts his eyes and shakes his head slowly. Mrs. Cratchit watches him anxiously.
Well?
He shakes his head more.
Well?
This is without a doubt the greatest success you have achieved since we were married.
I had my doubts about it. I wasn't too sure about the flour.
There's nothing wrong with that pudding. Except that it's very small for such a large family.
Nobody complained.
Any Cratchit would blush to even hint at such a thing. Look.
They gather around the fire.
Merry Christmas to us all. My dear, God bless us.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. God bless us.
God bless us. Everyone.
They drink their punch.
Is there no chance that boy will be spared?
Not if the future remains unaltered.
Hmm?
But so what if it happens? If he's going to die, he'd better do it quick and decrease the surplus population.
Man, if you be a man in your heart, forbear that wicked cant until you've discovered what the surplus really is and where it is.
Will you decide what men shall live, what men shall die? It may be that in the sight of heaven you are more worthless and less fit to live than millions, like this poor man's child. Oh, God, to hear the insect on the leaf pronouncing there is too much life among his hungry brothers in the dust.
A toast, children, to Mr. Scrooge, the founder of the feast.
Did you say Scrooge, founder of the feast?
Well, my dear...
Founder of the feast, indeed. I wish I had him here. I'd give him a piece of my mind to feast upon, and I'd hope he'd have a good appetite for it.
Oh, dear children, it's Christmas Day.
It should be Christmas Day, I'm sure, on which one drinks the health of such an odious, stingy, hard, unfeeling man as Mr. Scrooge. You know he is, Robert. Nobody knows it better than you do, poor fellow.
My dear, Christmas Day.
I'll drink to his health for your sake and the day's, not for his.
Grudgingly, she raises her mug.
Long life to him. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
A nice gesture.
A long life to him. Merry Christmas, Mr. Scrooge.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Scrooge.
He'll be about as merry as a graveyard on a wet Sunday.
Let's forget Ebenezer Scrooge and enjoy ourselves.
Give us a song, Tim Lad.
Silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright. Round yon virgin, mother and child, holy infant so tender and mild.
The spirit puts his hand on Scrooge's shoulder, urging him to go. They walk out onto snow-covered hills. A tornado sweeps them up and lifts them into the sky. It's a stormy night. A lighthouse stands on a rocky headland, its beams sweeping over a tumultuous sea. The spirit clasps Scrooge around the shoulder as they glide towards the lighthouse window and peer in. The two keepers are singing. The ship is tossed on the ocean. Scrooge and the spirit hover over it, as if in the eye of the storm. The tornado whips across its bows. The ship lurches and rolls. The spirit leads Scrooge down into the cabin, where the sailors sit singing around a table. Miners climb over mounds of coal at the pit head.
Christ the Saviour is born.
Scrooge and the spirit stand on top of a slag heap watching before they're whisked up into the sky. Then set down in Fred's comfortable drawing room.
He said that Christmas was a humbug. He really did. It seems the less Uncle Scrooge knows, the more stubbornly he knows it.
The narrower a man's mind, the broader his statements.
Well put, Mr. Bennett.
Thank you, my dear.
Do you think he believes it? About Christmas and humbug?
Oh, yes, he believes it.
And more shame on him, Fred.
That's what I say. More shame on him.
Oh. Well, if you say so, so do I, Miss Betsy.
Oh, Mr. Haynes.
Please, call me Topper. Everyone I like calls me Topper.
Oh, Mr. Topper.
My uncle's a very comical old fellow, but I'll not say anything against him. Heat the poker, Topper.
Fred goes to fetch the punch. His wife follows. Scrooge listens.
So easygoing, Fred. Why won't you say anything against Uncle Scrooge after the way he's treated you?
Why won't you, Fred?
Because I think his offences carry their own punishment.
Scrooge looks to the spirit to object. The spirit is adamant.
I've no patience with the man.
Well, Mr. Scrooge certainly has very few friends.
He's the most uncivil man I've ever met, Mr. Bennett. He never says good morning or good evening or Merry Christmas. He leaves a bad taste in people's eyes.
Poor devil. I mean, who suffers from his ill humour? Only himself. By not making merry with us, I'm sure he loses pleasanter companions than he can find in his own thoughts, either in his mouldy old office or his dusty chambers. Anyway, I mean to keep the door of happiness open and give him a chance every year to slip in, whether he likes it or not.
Scrooge scowls.
The poker topper.
Fred's wife's sisters gather round as Mr. Topper pulls a red-hot poker from the fire and dips it in the punch bowl. Fred ladles out the punch.
Topper, you do the honors.
My pleasure.
Topper takes over. Scrooge goes to take a cup, but it's whisked away by Fred. Fred's wife sits with her sister.
I don't understand why your husband defends Mr. Scrooge.
It's because his mother loved Scrooge so when they were children.
And if my mother loved someone, they must have had a good heart in them, just as she did.
She gave that heart to you, my dear. That's why I love you.
They're talking about your little sister Fran, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Sometimes forget that Fred is Fran's child.
You shouldn't.
The spirit taps Scrooge on the shoulder.
We have to go now.
He walks straight through the piano and is swallowed up by the wall. Scrooge follows.
Let's play Consequences, or Cupid's coming.
No, no, Dumb Crambo.
Blind Man's Bluff. Let's play Blind Man's Bluff.
Game spirit.
Scrooge watches them.
Games. It's been so long since... Let's stay a little.
Indoors, Mr. Topper's given a blindfold.
I can't see a thing, Mrs. Bennett.
Scrooge pushes his hand back through the wall and the rest of him follows. He steps back into the room as the large spirit emerges through the wall behind him. Topper's spun round and round. He tries to grab someone and trips over the sofa. Scrooge grins ruefully as Topper lunges at the ladies and careers into the mantelpiece. He chases one lady in particular.
He's cheating!
Topper Haynes is cheating.
Scrooge confides to the spirit as the lady is chased round and round a chair. Blindfolded, Topper races after her and grabs her by the hand. He runs his hands over her face.
Pretty little nose.
Then her lips.
Oh, little mouth.
Mr. Topper.
It's Betsy.
He pulls off the blindfold. Hanging from the lamp overhead is a piece of mistletoe.
Oh, Mr. Topper.
It must be a kiss.
A kiss!
Come on.
The couple indulge in a lengthy kiss. Betsy blushes.
Now we must go.
The spirit marches off. Scrooge pads after him down the snow-covered street.
Wait, spirit, I need to hear. That was my sister's favorite tune.
Fran.
Yes.
The spirit smiles and turns to Scrooge. Scrooge turns to face the window. Fred's wife is playing the piano. Scrooge Scrooge sighs.
You should have accepted Fred's invitation to dine.
What?
For Fran's sake. If not for yours.
I should.
We still have much to do.
The spirit strides on. In a prison, a jailer leaves a cell. He walks off down a gloomy corridor as the spirit and Scrooge appear. Slowly they approach the iron bars of the cell. A prisoner sits on his narrow bed. Scrooge looks fearful. The spirit sprinkles water. The prisoner stands and starts to play a penny whistle. Scrooge stares in amazement as the prisoners in the neighbouring cell join in.
On a cold winter night that was so deep. Noel, 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 Noel. Born is the King of Israel.
Scrooge walks with the spirit to an empty warehouse. The spirit looks older, his face wrinkled and drawn. His beard and curly hair have turned to grey. They step out into the street.
You've grown old, spirit. A spirit's life so short.
My life on this globe is very brief. It ends tonight.
Tonight?
Tonight at midnight. The time is drawing near.
Spirit, forgive me, but I see something strange and not belonging to you, there, beneath your robe. Is it a foot or a claw?
It might be a claw for all the flesh there is on it. Look. Look down here.
Two children crouch under his cloak, their hands grasping.
Spirit, are they yours?
No, they are man's. This boy is ignorance. This girl is want. Beware of both of them, but most of all, beware the boy. For on his forehead I see that written which is doom, unless the writing is erased. If you deny him, slander those who tell others about him, admit he exists but do nothing about it, then doom will engulf you all.
Are there no shelters? No charities to help them?
Are there no prisons? Are there no workhouses?
Scrooge looks behind him. When he looks back, the street's empty. Terrified, he starts to run. He races up the alleyway, slipping on the snow, then stops and gazes up in horror. A huge black phantom looms over him. It has no face. Its eyes are just two pinpricks of light.
The spirit of Christmas yet to come.
The phantom leans closer.
You are about to show me the shadows of things that have not happened, but will happen in the time to come. I fear you more than any of the spirits I have seen. Will you not speak?
The spirit lifts a bony finger and points. Scrooge nods.
Lead on. Lead on, spirit. The night is waning fast, and it is precious time to me. I know. Lead on.
The black-cloaked spirit walks with Scrooge past the two charitable gentlemen.
Sir, an introduction.
Yes.
Mr. Pembroke, sir!
Oh, that's very curious.
Ah, spirit, the stock exchange. Now I feel at home. I know these men. Here, profit is worshipped. Profit is everything.
The spirit points to a group of men.
I can't find out the truth about old Scratch.
No, I don't know much about it either. I only know he's gone.
When?
Well, just last night, they say.
But what was it? I thought he'd never die.
God knows.
What about his money? Who'll get it?
Not me, that's all I know.
It's likely to be a very cheap funeral, because I can't think of anyone who'll be there. Do you think we should volunteer?
I don't mind going if there's a lunch. I must be fed.
I never eat lunch, and I never wear black gloves. So there's not much in it for me. But if you're making up a party...
Let's just say we'll think about it.
The men chuckle and disperse. Scrooge tries to walk with one, then turns back to the towering figure of the spirit. The spirit points, and they're in a narrow alleyway. A poor girl rocks a baby. Scrooge observes, takes a step closer, then backs away. A teenage lad is leaning on a crutch.
I'll never spread out of money.
Scrooge steps inside a humble dwelling. An old man sits by a brazier, sorting through bundles of rags. The man looks up as three old people walk in.
What's this? An undertaker, a laundress, and a charlady. And all come at once.
It wasn't planned.
We're here by chance, Joe. There's no conspiracy.
If I thought there was, you'd be out like a shot. I can't be too careful. As it is, you're welcome.
They venture closer.
How goes the day, Joe?
I'm sure there's no one's older than mine, Mrs. Dilber. We're all suited to our calling, matched in heaven. I am a rag and bone man by trade and a rag and bone man by nature. But trade is not what it was.
Why are you looking, Mrs. Dilber? Everybody's got a right to take care of themselves. He always did.
No man more, Mrs. Riggs.
If he'd wanted to keep him after he was dead, wicked old screw, why wasn't he more easy-like in his life?
If he had been, he'd have had somebody to look after him when he was struck with death there. Instead of lying, gasping out his last there, alone there.
I'll do my bundle, Joe. Tell me what the value is. Now, speak plain. I'm not afraid to go first. We knew pretty well we was helping ourselves before we met.
It's no sin.
Only if we get caught.
No chance of that. Nobody cared what happened to him then or now. Open the bundle, Joe.
No, ladies. Mine first. It's the smallest.
The undertaker holds out a few objects wrapped in a cloth. Joe sorts through them.
Meagre pickings, Mr. Crump. A pencil case, two sleeve buttons, and a brooch of no great value. 7 shillings.
The undertaker grins.
Done.
Me next, Joe.
Let me see. Well, there's one sheet. 1, 2, 3, 4 towels. An old shirt. teaspoons. And sugar tongs. And an old pair of boots in need of repair. Well, now.
Joe chalks his calculations on the wall.
£1. 1 shilling and eightpence, Mrs. Dilber.
£1, 1 shilling and eightpence?
I always give too much to ladies. It's a weakness of mine. If you ask for one more penny, I'll repent and knock off 5 shillings.
At my bundle, Joe.
What are we doing in this place, Spirit?
What? Joe shakes out the charwoman's bundle.
Bed curtains. Bed curtains. You took them down with him lying there cold. God in heaven, the rings are still on them.
I did it, and why not?
You was born to make a fortune, Mrs. Riggs.
I don't hold my hand back when I can get something in it by reaching out.
Are they his blankets, Mrs. Riggs?
Who else's? He ain't likely to catch a cow without them, I dare say.
I hope he didn't die of anything catching.
Oh, don't be afraid of that. I wasn't so fond of his company that I'd loitered about him for anything like that and be dead.
Joe finds a white shirt.
Look at that shirt, Joe. Finest bit of silk you'll see in a month of Sundays. Then wasted it if it weren't for me.
What do you mean, wasted it?
Some fool put it on him to get married in. I soon took it off again. calico's good enough for him.
What? Scrooge winces. He backs away. Bumping into a bedpost, his shrouded corpse lies on the bed. The spirit looms over it. The spirit points. Scrooge comes closer.
I understand what you want me to do, spirit.
Scrooge looks at the corpse and swallows. He stretches out his hand and makes to pull back the covering from the corpse's face, but his hand trembles.
I would do it if I could. I've not the power, spirit. I've not the power.
The spirit fixes him with his luminous eyes.
Isn't there anyone who feels emotion at this man's death?
The spirit lifts its hand. A poor young woman carries a baby in her arms. She approaches a front door. A man steps towards her, his expression sober.
Is it good or bad?
Bad.
They are ruined then.
No, there's still hope, Caroline.
If he relents, there is, but that would be a miracle.
He's past relenting. He's dead.
To whom will our debt be transferred?
I don't know. That'll take time. And by then we will be ready with the money.
He smiles and kisses her cheek.
I never thought a death could bring so much happiness.
She breaks into a smile and they embrace.
Now. Now. Show me some tenderness connected with a death.
Mrs. Cratchit hands her husband a mug of hot drink. He kisses her.
The cemetery. You went today?
Yes, my dear. Wish you could have been there. Would have done you good to see how green a place it is. Still, you'll see it often. I promised him I'd walk there on a Sunday. Little child.
Bob's face crumples.
Little child.
He sobs. His wife urges the older children to stay as Bob climbs the stairs to Tiny Tim's bedroom. Scrooge follows him up. Bob sits by the bedside. Tim lies still, eyes closed. Bob gazes tenderly at him and pats the child's hand.
There, Tim. There, Tim. Don't be afraid. We'll always love you. Always.
He leans over and kisses the boy's pale forehead. Tim doesn't stir. Bob stands to go. Scrooge looks down at the little figure in the bed. The old man's lip quivers, and he sighs.
I met Mr. Scrooge's nephew Fred in the street today. He saw us a little down and asked what was the matter. I told him about our boy Tim. Do you know what he said?
What did he say, dear?
I'm heartily sorry for it, Mr. Cratchit. And heartily sorry for your good wife. By the by, how I knew that, I don't know.
Knew what, dear?
That you were a good wife.
Everybody knows that.
Well said, my boy. Anyway, young Fred gives me his card and says, that's where I live, Bob. Come and visit us. I was grateful. Not for anything he might do for us, so much as his kindly ways. It really seems as if he's known our Tim and felt for us.
He sounds good, soul.
Well, you'd be sure of it if you met him, Mother. I'm sure we'll never forget her, Tim, will we?
Never.
And I know when we remember how brave and patient he was, although he's only small, we'll never quarrel amongst ourselves again and forget our Tim doing it.
Of course we won't, my dear.
The Cratchits are seated by the hearth. Mrs. Cratchit walks over to kiss her sad husband.
I'm very happy. Very happy.
He kisses Martha. Scrooge bows his head and lowers his gaze, then turns to the draped and hooded phantom. Scrooge finds himself in a snowy churchyard. It's night. Icy fog drifts over the gravestones. Scrooge stands alone.
Spirit, answer me one question. Are these the shadows
of things that will be, or the shadows of things that may be only.
The spirit is lurking. It points to a tomb.
Men's actions determine certain ends, if they persist in them. But if their actions change, the ends change too. Say it is so with what you show me.
The phantom fixes Scrooge with its yellow eyes and points. Scrooge looks down and sees a tombstone carved with Ebenezer Scrooge, R.I.P. Scrooge stares, his mouth open.
Am I the man that lay upon that bed?
The spirit eyes him steadily.
Oh, no, spirit. Spirit, no, no. Spirit, hear me. I am not the man I was. Why show me this if I have passed all hope? Ah! Good spirit. Pity me.
He drops to his knees.
I will know Christmas in my heart and keep it all the year. The spirit of all three Christmases shall thrive in me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. Oh, let me wash away the writing on this stone.
The glowing eyes of the spirit are extinguished. It draws back its cloaked head. Scrooge's tombstone cracks to reveal the chasm of the grave below. Scrooge stares down into the pit. At the bottom he sees himself lying in an open coffin. Scrooge turns to go. The ground gives way and he topples in. He lands face down on the corpse. The ground shakes and he drops into a void. Clasping the corpse to him, he falls. Coming to, he's clutching the bedpost.
My room.
Morning light streams in.
My bed. Jacob, heaven. And Christmas time be praised.
He grasps the curtains.
Still here. They're not torn down, rings and all. They're here.
He looks down at his hands. Closing his eyes, he touches himself.
I'm here. Shadows of the things that would have been can be dispelled. They will be. I know they will.
He chokes. Then chuckles.
I don't know what day it is. I don't know how long I've been among the spirits. I don't know anything.
He runs to the window, throws open the shutters and lifts up the sash. But the street is empty.
No fog. No mist. Clear. Bright. Cold. Cold. Piping for the blood to dance to.
A boy trudges through the snow.
Hello! What's today?
Hi?
Well, what's today, my fine fellow?
Today? Why, it's Christmas Day.
It's Christmas Day. I haven't missed it. The spirits have done it all in one night. Well, they can do anything they like. Of course they can. Hello, my fine fellow.
Hello.
Do you know the poulterers in the next street?
Of course I do.
Have they sold the prize turkey hanging in the window? The big one?
What, the one as big as me?
That's it, delightful boy.
Yeah, he's still there.
Good, go buy it.
You're jossing.
No, go buy it in my name. And tell them to bring it straight here. Come back with the man and I'll give you a shilling.
Scrooge grimaces.
Come back in less than 5 minutes, I'll give you two!
The boy takes to his heels.
I'll send it to Bob Cratchit. You won't know who it's from.
Yep. Putting his coat on over his nightgown, he skips downstairs. He stands on his front step and beckons to the boy, who points to the poulterer.
Here's the man, and here's the turkey. Now, where's my 2 shillings?
Oh, that's a turkey. And here are your 2 shillings, my boy.
He hands them over.
Whoops!
Now, I want you to take this bird to Bob Cratchit, 24 Camden Road, Camden Town.
24 Camden Road?
Wait. You can't carry that bird all the way to Camden Town. You must take a cab.
Yes, sir.
Keep the change. And don't tell Cratchit where it came from. A cab, sir, a cab.
The man scampers off. Scrooge walks through the streets.
Good morning, madam, sir. Beautiful day.
Yes, Mr. Usher.
Good morning, my dear. What a lovely day.
He gives money to a beggar, then pats a child on the head.
Fine snowman! Fine snowman!
The youngsters pelt him with snowballs. Scrooge makes one himself and chucks it back.
Gotcha.
He walks into a church.
For Jesus Christ our Saviour was born upon this day to save us all from Satan's power when we were gone astray.
The vicar urges him to remove his top hat. Scrooge tips his hat, then realizing his mistake, takes it off. He slips into a pew and looks around uncertainly, trying to mouth the words. His kindly neighbour shows Scrooge his hymn book, and the two men share.
Comfort and joy, comfort and joy, oh tidings of comfort and joy.
Scrooge heads into a quiet square. A cab drives past. Scrooge tips his hat to 2 passers-by.
A Merry Christmas to you both.
Merry Christmas to you, sir.
He stops outside Fred's house. Topper sings. Fred's wife's at the piano.
I'm nervous, fidgety, very reserved. In fact, I'm most awfully shy. I can't look a girl in the face, but I blush, for I feel most awfully shy.
Shy, 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 oh, I'm so shy, dreadfully shy. Shy, 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 I can't pass a dress shop because I'm so shy.
Scrooge stands outside, then makes to walk on. Hesitating, he turns and looks up at the window.
But I blush, for I feel most fearfully shy.
Shy, 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 oh, I'm so shy, dreadfully shy. Shy, 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 I can't look a girl in the eye, I'm so shy.
He makes a sudden dash for the door. A maid opens it.
Is your master at home, my dear?
Yes, sir.
Well, where is he, my love?
He's in the dining room with his guests. I'll announce you.
Thank you, thank you. He knows me. I know the way, my dear.
Scrooge strides past her. The guests are eating dinner. Scrooge peers round the door. Fred sees him.
Fred, it's I. It's your Uncle Scrooge. I've come to dinner.
Fred stares.
Will you have me, Fred?
Then grins.
Bless my soul.
He drags his uncle in.
Have you? Of course we'll have you.
Fred shakes Scrooge warmly by the hand. The other guests look sober.
And you, my dear.
To Fred's wife.
Can you forgive a stupid old man who doesn't want to be left out in the cold anymore? Will you take me in?
She stands, her eyes full of concern, then smiles at him.
Merry Christmas, Uncle.
She kisses his cheeks.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
After dinner, there's dancing. Scrooge dances with Fred's wife in a heel-toe gallop. With nimble steps, he circles her round. Fred turns the music for his serious sister-in-law.
Oh, where are we?
The guests circle in a grand chain. Scrooge's face beams. Next morning, the hands on the clock on his office wall point to 9:20. Scrooge sits at his desk and checks his pocket watch. He clamps his lips together and waits. Bob Cratchit comes in. He puts his hat on the shelf, hangs up his muffler, and not looking at Scrooge, sidles towards his desk. He picks up his quill and sets to work.
Mr. Cratchit, a word with you.
Bob raises his head fearfully, puts down his quill and steps through to the inner office. He clutches one elbow nervously, his eyes studying the floor, then lifts his gaze.
What do you mean by coming here at this time of day?
I'm very sorry, sir. I'm behind my time.
Oh, yes, you are. Indeed you are.
It's only once a year, sir. It's only once a year. I was making rather merry yesterday, sir.
I'll tell you what, my friend. I'm not going to put up with this any longer. And therefore...
He wags an accusing finger.
I'm going to raise your salary. Ha!
Bob Cratchit stares.
Merry Christmas, Bob!
He edges back and grabs the poker.
Bob, merrier Christmas than I have wished you in many a year. I'd like to help your family, if you'll let me. I will raise your salary, and we will discuss your affairs this afternoon over a Christmas bowl of smoking bishop, Bob.
Scrooge rubs his hands.
Make up the fires. And before you dot another I, Bob Cratchit, buy another coal scuttle.
Bob Cratchit grins. He shovels coal onto the fire and the flames leap.
My uncle was better than his word. He did it all and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew, or any other good old city, town, or borough in the good old world.
Scrooge sits by his hearth.
Some people laugh to see the alteration in him, but he let them laugh, and little heeded them. His own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him.
Come along, Tim.
It was always said of Scrooge that he knew how to keep Christmas well, if any man alive possessed the knowledge.
Come, young man.
May that be truly said of us. And all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed,
God bless us, everyone.
Scrooge stands on his doorstep, holding the boy up in his arms. Mrs. Cratchit and her children smile. Scrooge welcomes the family inside, out of the snow. ITFC audio description by Louise Fryer was read by Diana Speed.